Welcome to Wake Up Podcast with Viv Trader. Viv is a curious person with the desire to embrace different opinions and expertise. Her focus is health, well-being, environmental, and political. She holds a non-judgmental approach and she is objective. Viv's ambition is to raise your awareness and contribute to a better world. She is also the founder of Vivalicious Food, which produces an innovative vegan baby food with added omega-3 from an algae oil. www.vivaliciousfood.com.
So today I have the real pleasure of inviting Neil Donald Walsh to my podcast. I am so honored to meet with you. You are such a legend for me. How would you like to introduce yourself, Neil?
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's lovely to be here with you as well. How I would introduce myself is I'm an ordinary person who had an extraordinary experience. I don't think of myself as a teacher or a master at any level. I'm not a spiritual guru. I'm not somebody who knows anything more than anybody else knows. But I do take dictation very well. I learned how to take dictation. I've been a newspaper reporter in my life, member of the working press, as they say. And so I learned the art of interviewing other people and taking down what they say and reporting it faithfully. And so I'm a person who simply had questions about life, who ran into some very difficult times in my life, as we all do, and who simply stopped everything I was doing one day and asked God, okay, what's going on? What don't I understand? You know, tell me what I need to know. And because I didn't receive what I needed to know from my religion as a child, nor from my culture as a member of the human species, I just didn't experience that I was receiving all that I needed to know. I got some of it, fair enough. You know, I wasn't without any information. But I don't think that I received all the information about God, about life, and even about myself that I needed to know in order to have a wonderful experience during my time here in this body. So I sat down one day in great frustration after I went through a very challenging time in my life. And I said to God, okay, what is it I don't understand here? And I was angry. I actually, I actually sat down and I wrote an angry letter. There was a tablet on my coffee table that I used to, you know, make grocery lists or whatever. And I was so angry one day that I just wrote an angry letter to God. Dear God, what does it take to make life work? And what have I done to deserve a life of such continuing struggle? Tell me the rules. I'll play this silly game. Just tell me the rules. And after you give me the rules, don't change them every other year. I don't even know how to play the game. Those are the things I wrote down on my tablet.
How old were you then?
How old was I? 53? 52, somewhere in there.
And what did Johnny look like prior to that?
How much of that do you want to know?
That you became homeless, you lost your wife, wanted to divorce you.
Yes, well,
your job.
At the same time, in the same 10-day period.
Right.
In 10-day period, I lost my relationship. I lost my job. I was, as they say in America, downsized. because the corporation couldn't, you know, afford to keep as many employees. And I was the last person they hired. So I was the first person out. I had no seniority. So I lost my wife and my relationship, and I lost my job 5 days in the same 5 days. Then 3 days later, as I'm driving down the road to go to another a job interview, a man turned in front of me and crashed into my car. It was a terrible automobile wreck, terrible accident, and I broke my neck. And it wasn't a small hairline fracture. I had a 3/4-inch fracture of the 7th cervical vertebrae posteriorly. In other words, I had a break in my neck big enough to put a pencil through.
Wow.
And you know, the doctor said to me when they, you know, they, of course, they took me to the hospital immediately, and they did what they could to get me out of my pain. And then the doctor said to me, you realize that most people who suffer that kind of a fracture in their neck die because of spinal cord complications. And if they don't die, almost always at the very least, they're paralyzed from the neck down.
Yeah.
You escaped both outcomes. And the doctor looked at me and he said, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? Because you've been given a great gift.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Well, of course, that naturally set my mind to thinking, what am I going to do? But I couldn't do much because I was out of work. I couldn't afford to keep my little apartment. When my relationship ended, I got a little apartment for myself, which is okay. But then I couldn't even pay the rent on the apartment. So the landlord had to ask me to leave. Now I'm living on the street. And not for, you know, a couple of bad weeks or two or three bad months. I had to live on the sidewalk for a year, one entire year of my life, waking up every morning without any money in my pocket, not even a few coins, nothing, not knowing whether I was going to eat that day, having to beg people on the street, anything would help. Could you give me anything would help? And if I collected enough money most days, I was able to maybe go to a fast food place, get a hamburger and some French fries. And that's how I lived for a year of my life. Now I'm finally got myself a little part-time job because you see, nobody would hire me by that. I should tell you that I had a collar, what's called a Philadelphia collar. It's a plastic device that holds your head up.
Yeah.
Because my neck would not support my head. So nobody would hire me because they said, one wrong move. If we hire you, you're a walking insurance claim. We're going to be paying your medical bills for the next 3 years. We can't hire you when you're with that thing on your neck. When you're you're healed, when everything is healed, come back because we like your credentials, but we can't hire you. So I couldn't get a job anywhere. So now
I
find
always
infuriating.
Oh, I bet. What's one of your biggest fears to become homeless prior to this accident and all this?
No, I never even thought.
Never crossed your mind.
I never even imagined that I would be literally homeless. I thought like even in the worst case scenario, even in the worst times, I could at least afford a little one room place somewhere. But I was out of work. I couldn't even get a job. Had no way of earning money. And that's, you know, that'll put you on the street pretty fast if you don't have relatives who will take you in. And I was too proud. I thought, you know what I thought? I could have had help. I could have gone to my father and said, can you take me into the house for a few months? But he lived 8 states away, halfway across the country, number one. He wasn't nearby. And number two, I was too proud. I didn't want to have to call my own parents. I mean, I was 50 years old, 49 to be exact. I was 49 years old. I wasn't a young kid. If I had been 22 or 23, I thought, my parents will understand. But I'm 49 years old. So I had too much pride. I would not call my parents for help. So I thought, you know, I can do this. Is fine. This will only be for a couple of months. I can survive for a couple of months. Well, a couple of months turned into a year. That's when I wrote my angry letter to God. Okay, all right. Obviously, there's something I don't understand here. I'm a good person. I mean, I never deliberately tried to hurt anybody. I never stole from anybody. I never, you know, physically damaged anybody. I'm a good human being. I'm a nice person. What the hell is going on? What does it take to make this game work? That's where I was coming from when I had my conversation with God.
Did you see yourself as a spiritual person prior to this incident? Did you feel intuition?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think that I would say that I had lots of intuition. I was born as a Roman Catholic. I mean, I was born into a Catholic family, and I was raised in the Catholic religion. Mm-hmm. And honestly, as a younger man, when I was 14 or 15, as a young boy, I wanted to be a priest. But because I was just in love with the whole idea of God and life. But then when I was 16 or 17, I remember, I had my first glimpse of a kind of person you are, namely a female. And we were just playing show and tell with each other. Nothing serious, but she took her clothes off. That was the end of my desire to be a priest. Right. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not missing out on this. So
funny, yeah.
So then I kind of like stepped into my regular life, got a regular job, you know, out in the world as in broadcasting, and finally found a lady that I fell in love with, got married, had children, did all the things that people do mm-hmm. in their life. Mm-hmm. So no, I was not what I would call a terribly spiritual person. And I kind of like, even, you know what? I almost even abandoned my religion. I stopped going to church. I didn't want to have anything to do with it because I didn't feel that it was serving me. Frankly, to be honest with you, I didn't understand why God would be the way the Catholic Church told me that God was, because the church told me that God was loving, for sure, absolutely loving, but also judgmental, condemning, and punishing. And I remember being told by the priest at one time that if you miss Mass, if you miss church one Sunday in your life without a good excuse, if you're caring for a sick parent, okay, fair enough. Or if you have a job that makes you work on Sunday, okay, fair enough. But if you just decide to go play golf or not to go to church that Sunday, mm-hmm. and then if you should get hit by a car on Monday and die, God will send you to hell. The Catholic Church told me that missing church on Sunday was a mortal sin, a sin requiring God to send you to hell for the rest of eternity for missing Mass 1 week.
Mm. Insane, right?
Well, my mind thought it was. My mind thought that was insane. Mm-hmm. I know that the Ten Commandments say, keep the Lord's Day holy, but I mean, my God. At the risk of being in hell for the rest of your life, if you decide to play, you know, golf one Sunday, or do something else, so I couldn't embrace a God who would be that cruel, that judgmental, and so I just dropped religion. I just dropped it altogether, mm-hmm. and I wanted nothing to do with it. And then, you know, when I got into my 30s and 40s, I began to look at some other religions. Maybe the Presbyterian Church would be better for me, or the Lutheran Church, or the Methodist Church, or who knows. I looked at Judaism. Maybe I should become a Jew. I looked at some of the other world religions. But all of them had so many rules, so many things you could do or couldn't do, should do or should not do, you know. And I thought, really? This is the kind of God we have? So then I just dropped the whole subject. I said, okay, I'm done with this. until I had the circumstance that I described to you.
Mm.
When I sat on my sofa, on my couch, one morning, very early in the morning, and I wrote a very angry letter to God. Okay, I give up. What don't I understand? And I began receiving thoughts in my mind, the words that came to me that I never dreamt of before, including, just to give you an example, so you know what I'm talking about, God said to me, Neil, there's no such thing as the Ten Commandments. You guys made that all up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any commandments. I'm the highest power in the universe. Do you really think I need something from you to make me happy? Do you really think I need you to worship me or much less obey me?
Mm-hmm.
Would you need a 3-year-old child to worship and obey you? No. You are my child, but not my servant, not my minion. So I began receiving other thoughts as well, and I thought, you know what, I better keep track of this. This is really interesting. And
how
frankly,
was it like a soft thought? Was it a clear voice? Or did you hear
it? It started off as a voice. Mm-hmm. I really thought for a moment, my God, there's somebody else in the room. Who's? And then I realized, oh boy, now I'm even hearing voices. So I thought, talk about, what else could go wrong? But then I didn't anymore hear any voice. It was just like a thought that would come to me, but it was a thought that I never had. Statements that I never would have ever made to myself. Like, as I said, no such thing as the Ten Commandments. I was told there's no such thing as right and wrong. I was told there are no victims and no villains in the world. Mm-hmm. I was told that pure love expects, demands, and asks nothing in return, even hopes for nothing in return. And I was told many other things that I was receiving in the form of thoughts. And I thought, could this be true? But, I wrote it down. And then I was told in the dialogue, you will make of this one day a book, and it will be accessed by many people. And you know what I thought, Viv? You know what I thought? I thought, now I gotcha. Now I gotcha. Because no one's going to publish a book by a guy who says he's having a conversation with God. That's not going to happen. No legitimate publisher, could self-publish it, but no actual publishing company is going to, I could just see, the boss. I could just see the owner of the publishing company running mm-hmm. out saying to his staff, hold the presses, stop everything. I got a guy here who's talking to God. It's not going to happen. So I knew it wasn't, and I knew the chances are 1 in a million that anybody would ever publish the book, much less that anybody would read it.
Hmm.
Well, I sent the book to a publisher, to a small little independent publisher, just to see what would happen. It wasn't a book. I just sent my handwritten notes, actually, to a small publisher. But they called me. And they said, we'd like to publish this as a book.
Wow.
I said, no, you're kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
They said, no, we're gonna put it out. So I thought, you know what? If it sells 500 copies, it would be a lot.
Wow.
Nobody's gonna.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they called it, they said, what do you want to call it? I said, I had Conversations with God. So I would call it Conversations with God. He said, okay, they didn't like the title. They were afraid people would be pushed away, but they put it out as Conversations with God. Well, it didn't sell 500 copies. It only sold 15 million.
Oh,
in 37 languages.
Hmm.
In almost every major language on the planet. People were buying the book everywhere, in Singapore, in Moscow, in Yaoundé, in Douala, in Ontario.
Before I knew about you.
Yes, of course. People were even buying the book in Australia, which is crazy. So, you know, I couldn't have imagined such a thing.
Do you think that's what happened? You know, when you ended up on the streets, you were too busy with hustle and bustle, you know, living your everyday life. So you weren't, you know, you had to be very silent in your head to be able to receive, be a channel.
Well, I wouldn't say I was a channel, but because people understand a channel as someone whose body is taken over by some other entity that speaks through the body. And they call that person a channel. That's not my experience. I don't think that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were channels. I don't think that people, you know, I don't think those people were channels. They were simply very good at taking down what they were being told. Mm-hmm. They just remembered what they were being told and they wrote it down.
Yeah.
That's all I did. I'm not a channel for God.
Very, very profound. How is your work now? How do you sit in silence and receive the messages? How does your work look like when you are writing the books? Do you need to be in total solitude, or what does a normal routine look for you when you are writing?
Well, I don't think anybody writes unless they're in total solitude. I don't know anybody who writes, you know, in the middle of a baseball game at Yankee Stadium with 10,000 people around. I don't know anybody who even writes in a house full of people. Even writers who are in a family, they find a place in their house they can be alone, of course. So every writer I've ever met is alone, writing whatever you're writing. I don't care if you're writing how to play a better game of bridge. I don't care if you're writing how to make a better apple pie, or if you're writing about God. Whatever you're writing about, you're going to be by yourself in a room all by yourself writing. I've written 39 books, so I know about this. Writing is a very lonely profession. Lonely if you really need to have people around. Now, I don't need to have people around. I don't feel lonely when I'm writing. I don't want anybody around. Just leave me alone. Give me some space. So I just find a place and a way to be by myself. And I do my writing. And these days, I respond to questions that people write in to my website, and they ask me questions, or my Facebook page, or they send me letters. And I try to answer the questions that people ask me.
And now you've written the God Solution, your latest book, where, you know, the power of pure love. I love that. Pure love. What is pure love for you?
Well, what I've said to my readers is that the world is facing some very serious problems. The biggest problem of which, I should say, is alienation. We are allowing ourselves to be alienated from anybody who is different from us. If you have a different skin color, if you have a different religion, if you have a different economic status, if you have a different nationality, if you have a different, even a different gender, different sex, you know, if you're different from me, and certainly if you have different political views, now you're really in trouble. And so we make everybody wrong for simply being different. We make everybody wrong for simply being different, for having a different idea than the idea we hold. So I went deep within and I said, there's got to be a solution to this. And I called it the God Solution, because the solution is to change our definition of God itself. See, because right now we're acting like we think God acts with us. We're acting with each other the way we think God acts with us. If we do something that God doesn't like, then God will judge us, condemn us, and punish us. So if people do something that we don't like, then we will judge, condemn, and punish them. That's why we've had armed conflict on this planet for all but 2% of recorded history. That's why we have the kind of world that we live in, where there is so much alienation, and where we care so little about each other, that 653 children die on this planet of starvation every week. No, actually, it's every day. No, I'm sorry. It's every hour.
Terrifying.
That statistic is real. 653 children die on this planet of starvation every single hour. That's how uncivilized we are as a species. And we consider ourselves an advanced civilization. So the God solution is to change our idea of God, which would then change our idea of who we are. Because right now we're trying to, every religion in the world, by the way, there are 4,000 religions, in case you don't know, 4,223 religions on the earth being practiced right now. And every religion teaches us that we should emulate God. We should try to be godly. We should be with each other the way God is with us. So we are. We are with each other the way we think that God is with us. But if we changed our definition of God, if we said, what if God was pure love? Mm-hmm. What if God needs nothing from us, requires nothing of us, hopes for nothing from us, and of course, demands nothing of us? What if God simply loves us mm-hmm. and asks for nothing in return? Pure love. That's pure love. Viv, we can't even love the person on the pillow next to us that way. We don't know how to love each other. That we can't even love ourselves that way. So, of course, we can't imagine a God who loves that way. But when we begin to understand that that's how God loves us, now we have something we can emulate. Now we have a behavior we can model. Now, finally, we can behave in a way with others that God behaves with us. And we can love each other without needing, requiring, demanding, hoping for anything in return. Would that change the world? Only yeah. overnight.
Mm. Unconditional love. Operate with your heart, not your head, your ego.
Yes, and operate with a heart that realizes that it needs nothing from anyone else in order to be happy and complete. See, here's the issue. Here's the problem, Viv, as I understand it. My awareness is that most people don't know who they really are.
Yeah.
But I'm not this. This is not who I am. I'm not my body. My body is simply something I have. It's not who I am. I'm not even my mind. My mind is something I have, but it's not who I am. I understand myself to be a spiritual entity mm-hmm. that some people call a soul or a spirit. Or that's who self. I am. Mm-hmm. I'm a spiritual entity that's using my body and my mind in order to bring myself an opportunity to experience my true identity. So I brought myself into the realm of the physical in order to demonstrate who I really am and who everyone really is. So yeah. when I see any other person, I see divinity in them as well, even when I don't agree with them. Even when I disagree.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Non-judgmental, interesting viewpoint. You can think like that, that's fine. And it's interesting too with people that have, you know, has passed over to the other side and have this unconditional love. The God is there meeting them. They don't want to return back to Earth.
They do. They do return back to Earth.
They do to fulfill the mission, some of them.
They reincarnate over and over and over and over again.
Have you done past life regressions? Do you know your past lives?
No.
You have done? No.
No, I have not had any interest in knowing about a past life. I'm interested in, and I don't want anyone else's idea of what my past life has been to influence me. I know I've had past lives. I've experienced in my own life, you know, certain past life encounters. Like I was walking down the street one day in Germany. Anyway, I was walking down the street in Hamburg. It was in Hamburg. I was in Hamburg, and I was walking down the street, and I said to my wife, "Oh my gosh, I know what's around the next corner. I've never been to Hamburg. This is my first, I'm a visitor here. But I know what's around the next corner. It's going to be a big building, like a library or some kind of a, maybe it's a government building. It has three pillars. It's two stories high." I described it. We walked down the street, turned left, made the corner. There was the building exactly the way I described it.
Wow.
She said, "How could you possibly know?" I said,
"I don't know.
Obviously, I've been here before.
I've had a
past life here."
That's amazing. What do you think has been your most valuable lesson in this life in terms of your personal development?
That my life isn't about me. My most important lesson is, Neil, your life is not about you. It's about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. But when you understand that that's what your life is about, you will experience that it really is about you in the biggest sense, in the largest sense. Your life is about big you, not about little you. For a very good reason. There's only one of us in the room. I and you are one. There's no separation between us. There are differences. Boy, as the French would say, vive la différence. There are differences, but there are no divisions. There's no separation between us. When I see you as simply an extension of me, I will treat you that way, as kindly and as lovingly, as sensitively, as compassionately as I would want to be treated. Because you are me, simply in a different form. My fingers are different from each other, but not separated from each other. We are all fingers on the hands of God. Of course, you're wrong about all of this.
Very, very nice. How do you think we can get people to understand this and become nicer and kinder to each other?
Well, exactly what Gandhi told us. Be the change you wish to see. Exactly what any great, and I'm not that, but any great teacher or spiritual mystic has done. They've simply gone through the world modeling the behavior that demonstrated who they really are. And by modeling that behavior, they created a pretty big impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, Moses created a pretty big impact. Buddha created a pretty big impact. Jesus created a pretty big impact. Muhammad created a pretty big impact. There are people, male and female, Catherine of Genoa created a pretty big impact. Elizabeth of Hungary created a pretty big impact. Joan of Arc created a pretty big impact. When you act as if you know who you really are, the lives of thousands of people are touched, and things begin to change. And so I've been saying to people, if you wish to see a different world, be a different you. Have a different reason for even getting up in the morning. Have a different reason for having a relationship. Most people are living their lives hoping to get as much out of it as they can. Most people get into a relationship because they hope to get something back from the other person. Yeah. They're looking for love, mm-hmm. or whatever other benefits they might feel that they could receive. But pure love says to the other person, I only want you to be happy. You need to give me back nothing. I have only one desire, and that is for you to be happy. That's how much I love you. But if I want something back from you, then I'm not loving you purely. I'm loving me. I'm loving me through you, simply mm-hmm. using you as a mm-hmm. means of getting what I want to experience.
Mm-hmm. Not very genuine or authentic. But what is self-love for you then, Neil?
Self-love for me is knowing who I really am, expressing and experiencing it, and being deeply grateful for every moment when I have an opportunity to do that, and appreciating myself. Mm-hmm. You know, the word appreciate has an interesting double meaning in English. We're told that property appreciates in value. Mm-hmm. That is, it becomes greater. Mm-hmm. So to appreciate doesn't only mean to be grateful, it means to increase in value. Mm-hmm. When I look at myself in the mirror, I appreciate who I really am. That is, I am grateful, and I also seek to increase the value of who I really am. So self-love is my willingness to accept the grandest version of the greatest vision I ever held about who I am. And to not be afraid to tell other people, not from a place of arrogance, not from a place of ego, but from a place of simple truth. Mm-hmm. To let each other know who I am, and to let each other know that I see who they are. I asked my wife, we were having a kind of an interesting conversation a few years ago, and I said, you know, I'm kind of curious, when did you fall in love with me? She said, I fell in love with you the day you looked at me one day, and you said, we were just friends at the time, but you looked at me and you said, I see you.
Oh, very lovely.
She said, I knew right then and there, oh my God, I love this guy. He's not asking for anything. He's just telling me he sees me. Finally, someone who just sees me for who I really am.
Isn't that what we all crave?
Of course.
every single one of us.
Of course it is.
Seen and loved for who we are deep down.
Of course it is.
Mm. Do you have any fears?
Not anymore.
You conquered them all.
I've let go of all of my fears. I had fears as a younger person. I don't have any fears anymore. You know, I'm fond of saying I'm too old to be afraid anymore.
Beautiful.
You know, I'm 80 years old. I'm going to be 80 years old in about 10 weeks.
You're very vital, and your eyes, it's almost like I can see God through your eyes. You have a very present, deep, something about your presence. You're very different from anyone else I met, in a very good way.
Well, those are gentle things to say to me. Thank you for making that observation. Thank you for seeing me.
Yeah, and it is lovely when you have the, you know, that connection. It's very, something magic happens, and it's very.
Yes. Mm. And that's, you know, that's when people fall in love. Yeah, that's what happens. And then the question is, now what am I going to do?
Do you believe in like twin souls?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And becoming one, like being here on a mission and raising the planet's vibration, and twin flames becoming one energy and giving the extra power to create in a much,
yes,
much faster way.
I believe that that is possible, and that it happens. Yes, I do believe in that. I believe in twin souls for sure. You know, when my wife and I first met, the very first meeting, we told each other later. We didn't say it at that time, but we told each other later. It was love at first sight. Literally love at first sight. We didn't have any long conversation. We didn't exchange any, you know, energy at all. She walked into the room. It was a room full of people.
Yeah.
I watched her walk into the room. We looked at each other, and both of us, we told each other later, both of us had the same experience. Uh-oh. Here we go again. I've known this person before. Here we go again. She kept her promise. I remember thinking, oh my God, she kept her promise. She promised she'd come back. And we would never be apart for very long. And here we are again. Now, for me, it was very risky to think that, because she was much younger than I am. I mean, a lot younger. She was young enough to be my child.
That's very common, though. Usually.
She was 30 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
Not 10 years younger. Not 20 years younger. 30 years younger. And she walks into the room, and I'm trying to tell myself, no, I'm not attracted to her just because she's a younger woman. You know, I was trying to talk myself, you know, out of that, not to think that I had ulterior motives. But ultimately I realized, oh my gosh, it's nothing to do with the fact that she's so young. I know this person. I know exactly who she is. We are absolutely twin souls. Now, I'm going to be leaving here much sooner than she is if life proceeds the way it normally does. If there's a terrible accident or whatever, I suppose it could be different. But if life proceeds the way it normally does, I'll be leaving here soon. I'm 80 years old. You should, you know, we decided to become partners 1 week after we became intimate. we were just friends from a distance, just distant friends, just casual social friends. But then we had a couple of lunches together, you know, like all people do. We had a little date. We had a couple of dates, nothing major going on. But then about 3 months after we, 3 or 4 months after we met, we became intimate. We didn't rush into that. It was like 4 or 5 months later, we became intimate. Now it's a week after that, a week after our first intimacy. We're driving along in the car to go to a play. We're going to go to a theater to see a play. And she looked at me from the passenger seat and she said, "You know what? I think we should be married." And I looked at her and I said, "You don't want to say that to me twice." She said, "No, I mean it. I'm not kidding. I think we should be married." Mm-hmm. We have the same philosophy, the same understanding about life. We even like the same food. Mm-hmm. You know, we're good together in romantic ways. I think we should be together.
It's like coming home, isn't it?
Yeah. I said, "You do understand that you're young enough to be my daughter." She said, "Yeah, I think we should be married." So I said, "Okay, it's a deal." I reached across the car and shook her hand. The next day, we got on an airplane. We went to Las Vegas, which they call Sin City, because you can get married in Las Vegas with no waiting period. You go to the courthouse, they give you a marriage license. You go to a marriage chapel, and an hour and a half later, you're a man and wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we got married.
Wow. What a gorgeous story. I love it.
Yeah.
How long did it take before you realized? Did you know about twin flames then? Or has there something?
No. Occurred? No, I have not. I didn't have any idea about that particular. I mean, I didn't have any. I had an idea. You know, I heard, like we all hear about it, but I never had any experience of it. But when I saw her when she first came into the room the very first time, oh my God. There she is. And I'm not, now what am I going to do? Mm. How do I deal with this? So, you know, we found each other. And I will probably leave the planet way ahead of her, which means that if she lives as long as I live, she'd wind up having, golly, 30 years without me. If she lives as long as I live. But she said, "I understand that. I know what I'm in for, and I wouldn't miss this for anything."
Don't you think that was the contract you made to before coming into this life?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. That's why I said, "Oh, she kept her promise."
Yeah.
Oh, she kept her promise.
And you had your mission together. You have your mission together as well.
Yes.
You had your own. She has her own. And then you have one together.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly how it feels. And I could be making it all up, but you know what? Somebody said to me, "Well, you could just be making up a big romantic story in your mind." And my answer is, you know what? I could be. But I'm living with it. It's better than the old story I used to live. So even if I'm making it up, good enough for me.
Yeah, you feel that pure love because you know what a non-genuine love is. And if you're living in a twin flame, you know it's the real love.
Yeah.
The other half of you.
Yes. Yeah, she really is my other half.
Mm. You're lucky to have met your other half.
Yes, you're exactly right. I am lucky. But I was 53 years old before that happened in my life. 53, did I say 53? I was wrong. 63. I was 63 years old when we were married.
Well, isn't this what they say? The best is yet to come?
Yeah. Yeah.
Save the best to the end.
Yeah. Let's save the best for last.
Exactly. I love talking to you, Neil. Is there anything else you like to sort of chat or mention to anyone out there? Have you got any advice for anyone who's perhaps struggling to connect with themselves, to connect to the inner love?
I would say forget about trying to connect with yourself. Allow yourself to notice that in every moment that life brings you, you have an opportunity to give people back to themselves. Let me share with you an example of what I mean.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Two or three years ago, I was coming out of a coffee shop and I went to my car and a police officer was putting a parking ticket on my car. And I walked up to him and I said, "Sir, could I talk to you?" He said, "Yeah." I know he thought I was going to give him a ration, tell him that I didn't appreciate his putting a ticket on my car. But I didn't. I said to him, "I just wanted to say to you, I get who you are. I'm clear that in the morning, when you put that little piece of silver metal and pin it on your shirt, you're making a promise, a sacred promise, that if any harm comes between me and something else, you will step between us and you will protect me, even if it costs you your life. And I want you to know, I know what you're doing when you put that badge on your shirt, and I appreciate it." Mm. And he walked up to me and he said, this is a guy who's about, I don't know, 50, 55 years old. He looked at me and he had the smallest little, he wasn't crying, you know, but he had the smallest little, just a tiny little drop coming out of his eye. He looked at me and he said, "You know what? I've been on this police force for 37 years and no one has ever said anything like that to me. You've just made my whole career."
Wow.
He turned around and he reached to get the ticket off the car. He was going to tear it up. I said, no. I didn't tell you this to get you to tear up my ticket. This is not quid pro quo. This is not tit for tat. This is not a trade deal. I told you that because I meant it. You put that ticket right back where it was. You were simply doing what you do every day. You were doing your job. Go and be the grandest version of who you really are."
I think you transformed his life then.
He looked at me and he said, as he walked by me, he said, "What are you, some kind of a minister?" Yeah. And I said, "Yeah, that's what we all are. Some kind of minister." So what do I say to people when they say, "How can I get in touch with myself?" Put other people in touch with themselves. And you will have the grandest experience of yourself that you ever had. Or as Conversations with God said to me, give to another what you wish to receive in your own life. Don't be a seeker. Be the source.
Mm. Beautiful. Love it. Been such an honor, Neil, talking to you. Time goes so quickly, I could stay on for another hour. Thank you so much for taking your precious time and being so authentic and honest and helping the world to become much more loving, kind, compassionate. Well,
thank you for taking your time, which is just as precious as mine. Thank you for the opportunity. And thank you for the invitation.
I hope you got some valuable information today. Wake up, wake up. And thanks for checking in and waking up. See you next time.